welcome. Okay, welcome to Immunize Wisely. We're on the Republic Broadcasting Network. It's amazing. This network's been going for over 20 years, I think. I'm pretty sure. I would like to know the anniversary date anyway, you know, because it was amazing that, I mean, there's many times this network was ready to go down, and John Stadtmiller saved it, and then after his untimely demise, you know, it's amazing that the board operators and Julie and, you know, everyone, like, kept it together somehow. I'm very pleased that, you know, we have one of the best talk radio, free speech, actually, talk radio stations in the country. So I'm glad to be part of it. Today is July 29th, 2023. Things are clipping along. And I'm your host, Ingrid Castle. I'm the director of Vaccination Liberation, which is basically a national grassroots association that's, you know, focuses on providing information on vaccinations primarily, but also any pharmaceuticals and injections and anything that they want to give you, especially, you know, breaking the hermetically sealed body, you know, big no-no. And most of this information is being censored intensely today. We want people to make the only informed choice, complete avoidance and refusal. And by the way, the show, this is going to be focusing on some of that. Why? We have the tools for that complete avoidance and refusal of Big Pharma. That's going to be a big topic today. Some amazing stories of people that, you know, were in the system and how they were able to survive and actually thrive with this one trick. So our websites are vaccinetruth.com. That actually is our, you know, easy to get to website, but our main website is vaclib.org. And .com also, we got that. It's a redirect, but it's short for Vaccination Liberation. And my business website's humbleweed.net, and that's where I sell certain high-quality products that I've found that help people recover their health in this day and age of vaccines, pharma drugs, fentanyl, chemicals, microwave radiation, you know, you name it. We are being under assault in a huge way, and we need patriots to stay alive. That's why I call the show Immunize Wisely, which means to strengthen our immune function. It's not really a system like the endocrine system or anything like that, you know, because every, you know, your mind is actually part of the immune system, how you think, believe it or not. Stress will weaken your immune system. Negative thinking will weaken your immune system. So we do have a chat room. I like using the chat room. If you have stuff you want to contribute, great. If we can stay on topic as much as possible, that's great too. Immunize Wisely, that's all spelled out. Wisely is with a Z, stylized. And that's .chatango.com. chatango.com. So, anyway, I will be dropping a couple links there, and please do what you can to support the network. You know, I did get a call. Apparently, not everyone appreciated having a show on why our bodies are designed to be vegetarian, but that is a fact. Most of us like to indulge in meat. It's better to do it, you know, sparingly. But we do have some, you know, if you're a meat eater, that's great. Most people are. And Weston A. Price promotes that. You know, they want you to have grass-fed beef, you know, something that's actually where the, I mean, the animals are actually raised in a healthy manner. But the fact is, if I know the healthiest people actually are not meat eaters, but they eat living food like Ann Wigmore, you know, where they're doing lots of sprouts, lots of raw foods, There's a way of eating very healthily, and John Christopher talked about that, where none of the food that you eat is heated above 125 degrees, and you could actually slow cook stuff that way. You know, even millet, you know, your grains, you sprout them, you know, and kind of get them to slightly germinate. And there's a whole way of doing that and having, you know, crackers and stuff from seeds and nuts and legumes. So anyway, that's my way, I believe. But I just had a hamburger Friday. I told my friend who's a vegan vegetarian that I had a hamburger. Oh, my. It was a healthy one, but, you know, you want to make sure that you're doing what you need to for your colon. It's true, you won't have any parasites if you don't consume animal protein. That's just a fact. Parasites thrive on animal protein. Dairy products, you know, they love milk, you know, things like that. You know, there's even a story in the Essenes, the Book of the Essenes, where Jesus used a gourd and a reed to, you know, give the disciples enemas, you know, help to clean them out. And there was one man who was very sick, and he was on the ground. Are you there? Okay. I'm hearing a bleed through, Frank. So anyway, maybe cut off your feed. I don't know. So anyway, in the story in the Book of the Essenes, this man was very sick, and Jesus knew he had, you know, likely parasites or something, and he had one of the disciples heat some milk up, some goat's milk and stuff, and put it right near the man's rectum, and a big tapeworm crawled out, and, you know, to go for the milk. You know, the guy had been, they had him fasting on water, and he was weak. And that really freaked everyone out. But I'm just saying that's just, parasites thrive in, people that consume animal protein. That's just that's a fact. So, I mean, people can take whatever they want to learn from the show. I don't believe anyone's going to, you know, change their lifestyle habits overnight. I know, even Mer Bailey says, you know, I used to be a coffee drinker. I used to love chocolate. She's feeling great not doing any of those things now and being a vegan vegetarian. So, you know, no more cheese anymore. That was a favorite, you know, thing that she liked to consume too. So, you know, we all have to find our own way and what makes our, temple of the Holy Spirit, I like to say, thrive in these times. And, you know, if we don't see that what we're dealing with is spiritual warfare, I don't know what to tell you, because I have a friend, I just found out, Ken Hardy in Las Vegas, he passed. He likely had cancer. Now, this is that's what his children say. That's what the autopsy said. He had cancer. Now, this is a guy that sold a lot of health supplements. He knew a lot about health. He offered me to sell Fibrenza. He said Fibrenza would be good for cancer. He took a lot of it. Well, he died of cancer. But he also had a bicycle accident. He ended up with a terahertz wand. Now, he was using the terahertz wand. He wasn't recovering very rapidly. I helped him as best I could. But one thing I noticed about him is he didn't really have any sense, intuitive sense. A lot of men, you know, they're very, he's very rigid in his scientific stuff. He's very, very focused on, you know, dangers of wireless and vaccines. And he came out with tons of literature. If anyone ordered anything from me, you know, during the pandemic, you likely got a piece of literature he sent me. I mean, he was printing stuff out, sending me boxes, you know, just rabid on trying to wake people up on the pandemic thing. And I thought, you know, people are going to wake up in their own time. That's one thing I learned about this movement is that, you know, you can't force someone to wake up. And most people, frankly, don't wake up until they have a tragedy. Like, there's nothing that can wake people up on the vaccines are dangerous, like a vaccine injury, okay? Or, you know, a family member that, you know, within 48 hours they're dead or they're disabled or they're having seizures all after a vaccine. When you witness that kind of an injury, then you're a believer. But otherwise, you know, we're so programmed from school, and everything is to rely on authority figures and the experts. And, you know, we all have different types of programming. I mean, I'm becoming more conscious of it all the time, you know, things from our childhood, you know, things that we just do habitually, think habitually, you know, is the way things are. And that, so deprogramming actually takes quite a conscious effort. So, you know, you just have to let people go. But this gentleman, you know, was a friend, and he wanted to support vaccination liberation, and you know, saw that I wasn't going to do a whole lot because I after years and years of experience, you know, you can't beat people over the head with a 2x4. They're going to do what they have to do until it forces them to pay attention, you know. And yeah, like I said, it's usually an injury. And that's, you know, I told, you know, a friend here, she did more for the vaccination liberation movement than anyone because she had a 4-month-old baby. Her first baby died from a slew of the shots. And she was also warned plenty of times during her pregnancy, and the pediatrician pressured her. So there you go. So she became a huge mouthpiece for our movement and woke tons of people up. You know, she couldn't talk about it enough, and she had to work at a health food store. So there you go. But so there, you know, I'm just saying it's usually takes a tragedy to get involved. You know, like I think of Scott Shera, you know, with his own daughter. They might not have gotten the COVID jab, but, you know, just to wake people up to the dangers of the hospital system. So anyway, that's going to be a huge topic tonight. But, you know, the two big burning things to me are the money system is really close to collapsing, actually. We have a fifth bank that just failed. Heartland Tri-State Bank in Kansas has been closed by regulators, and that's the fifth bank this year. That's on the FDIC.gov. And this is just the beginning of the end because – you know, when mark my words, when August 22nd happens, when, you know, gold-backed bricks, you know, is goes live in a big way, and that's going to be the main currency of the world, the dollar's toast. And I keep telling people, you know, you need to have, I mean, people are like, oh, have your water, food, but you should have some cash, and yes, you should have some silver, because silver is, you know, more spendable, but you should just have basic cash. I mean, your cards aren't going to work or are going to be worthless, you know, using a, you know, even a debit or a credit card. You know, there'll be runs on the bank. I mean, all of that stuff. So I can't stress that enough, you know. And the more cash you can take out of the bank, just leave what in the bank what you need for your bills and, you know, forget the rest, you know, just – you know, have a decent, safe stash at your house and start getting used to using cash. And then the other thing that to me is probably the biggest thing, and I was so glad that RBN picked up Clayton Morris' redacted news interviewing Michael Yon. The border crisis to me is huge, absolutely huge. I mean, 10,000 a day, they're saying. And then, you know, we have the fentanyl that's crossing the U.S. border each month to kill every enough to kill every American. I mean, this is every month. So this is an article that came this morning in the Epoch Times. I'm just going to read it real quick. It's just unbelievable. In June, U.S. Customs and Border Protection seized approximately 2,100 pounds of illicit fentanyl at the U.S. southern border, according to the agency's latest report. The amount is enough to kill every American, and then some. 1 kilogram, 2.2 pounds of fentanyl can potentially kill a 500,000 people, according to the DEA, or Drug Enforcement Administration. And Donna Nelson says, I don't think the public is really aware of what a challenge this is. Now, she's an organic chemist and professor at the University of Oklahoma. She told the Epoch Times, you have to assume that the border agents are not catching everything that's coming into our country. And the amount that keeps coming in keeps increasing, not steadily, but it is increasing over time. So Ms. Nelson was also a science advisor for the show Breaking Bad and the 2016 president of the American Chemical Society. She was also pivotal in showing how the chemical structure in what they call bath salts, spice, and related designer drugs impact a person in a similar manner as illegal drugs. Today, however, she turned her research prowess to what she considers an even bigger problem, illicit fentanyl, a synthetic opioid which she says should be declared a weapon of mass destruction. Prescription fentanyl is generally prescribed by doctors to treat patients suffering from severe or chronic pain. However, illicit fentanyl has become a source of the majority of overdose deaths in the United States. In fiscal year 2020, the Border Patrol seized an average of 445 pounds of fentanyl per month at the southern border. And in 2021, the fiscal year 2021, it was 882 pounds per month. I mean, that's nearly double. In 2022, the amount seized per month was 1,175 pounds. That's nearly triple. I mean, this is like astounding. So the total amount for 2023 won't be available until October. But the Border Patrol has already seized more fentanyl in the first 9 months than it did for all of 2022, for an average of 2,427 pounds per month. In less than 3 years, the amount of fentanyl seized at the southern border has increased more than fivefold. Every month, that's enough to kill every person in the United States, Ms. Nelson said. That's every month. Enough. So, I mean, this is really, and that shows a picture of a penny and how much fentanyl it takes of this, you know, illegal kind, how much is a lethal dose. And it is what the comparison is pretty amazing, because it's about, I would say, a 20th of the size of a penny. That amount is enough to kill you. So she said that while Americans might hear about people dying from fentanyl poisoning, she doesn't think they're fully aware of the scope of the problem. So to help raise awareness, she organized a symposium on fentanyl during the American Chemical Society's annual meeting in San Francisco in August. She says the public needs to be alerted about this, and I don't think that they're really that knowledgeable. So she said the symposium will feature leaders in the fight against fentanyl, and including a virtual presentation from Representative Neil Dunn, a Republican in Florida. Mr. Dunn introduced a resolution to the U.S. House in January, which would classify illicit fentanyl-related substances as weapons of mass destruction. And he said classification will make it easier to curb drug trafficking and free up resources from U.S. law enforcement. And so it kind of go on, but the escalating fentanyl deaths, that's horrifying. The DEA reports that fentanyl is involved in more deaths of Americans under 50 than any other cause of death, including heart disease, cancer, homicide, suicide, and other accidents. It is the leading cause of death. You got that? For the 12 months ending in January 2022, the CDC reported that 71,238 Americans died from fentanyl poisoning, an increase from 2020, which had an estimated 57,834 deaths. So, I mean, it just goes on and on. But, you know, the problem is they're not putting that on the death certificates necessarily. That's why it's underreported. There's a family, and that's this is what Miss Babcock says, this founder of Lost Voices of Fentanyl, April Babcock. She said there's a family that's pretty definite their kid died from fentanyl because they found fentanyl at his house. But guess what? He was never tested. The death certificate says he died from cocaine, and no, he didn't. He died from fentanyl. So this is the problem, is they're not doing autopsies. You know that it costs too much to do an autopsy. You have to actually pay out of pocket. Your county coroner is not going to do an autopsy. So she said the family is pushing to get a bill passed in Maryland that requires all hospitals to test for fentanyl if an overdose occurs. I hear it all the time. They didn't test for fentanyl. How are we ever going to get the right data? So this is huge. Really, it is. It's taking a toll on our young people. I mean, there's a great, short little video of a parent just blasting her school board, rightfully so. It's a good speech, really explaining. I mean, our children are just inundated with this crap that they can't handle, you know, from the, you know, gender bending stuff to, you know, are you really a boy? Maybe you're a girl in disguise and all this. They can't even handle this stuff emotionally. They're not allowed to be children. They're not allowed to learn the basics of what they need to learn to make it in the world. It's just a tragic what's happened to our schools. And no wonder these children are depressed and young adults are depressed. So there is a hotline, and I'm going to put this article in the chat room. Again, that's immunizewisely.chatandgo.com. I'm sorry, it's chatango.com. But anyway, I really think this is important. So I wanted to mention my guest that's going to be coming on in a few moments. She had this incredible experience in 2012. So I'm just going to read it as though, just pretend I'm her, okay? In March 2012, I went to my doctor not feeling well. He got the results of my blood work and sent me to the hospital for further testing. In the hospital, they ran more blood work, x-rays, ultrasounds, an MRI, scans, and even colonoscopies. They told me I had tested positive for it's the name, Latin name for a tapeworm. It's a large tapeworm in her liver. It was, she was apparently number 11 in Canada to ever have this. And they had pictures of it and four cysts in my liver. The small one was 7.5 inches, and the large one was 12 inches. I mean, these are cysts in her liver. This is unbelievable. I had anemia and a blocked colon. The images from my colon also had unexplained images of tiny horseshoes that were highly reflective, and I was hyperthyroid. The doctor's plan was to hospitalize me and address the parasite in my liver first with high doses of antibiotics and vitamin K for my liver, then to get special medication to be able to biopsy my liver to figure out how to treat the parasite. 2 weeks of IV, and then they had to transfer me to a larger center with a liver specialist 5 hours away. The antibiotic treatment now completed. A friend got me the clay, and I started to drink it without telling the doctors while I was in the hospital. I worked my way up to drinking one cup of the mixture 3 times a day. That's 8 ounces of liquid clay 3 times a day. After 2 weeks of drinking the clay in the hospital, they had acquired the special pills I had to take. The pills would coat my system with a film so that if eggs from the tapeworm escaped from it into my body, I would not die from the anaphylactic shock. They took me for a scan to see the location of the parasite and the cysts on my liver. All the cysts on the liver were gone, and only a bit of scar tissue, the size of the fingernail on your pinky finger, remained. The parasite was no longer there either. They concluded that the blood tests and pictures for the parasite were now incorrect and could not explain how the liver healed itself so quickly. They biopsied the liver, and the test results came back negative for a parasite and negative for infection. I was allowed home after 30 days, and then the doctors wanted to do bowel surgery. It was explained I would lose a large section of my colon and possibly have to wear a bag. I was reluctant at the time and wished to continue my clay of 1 cup at 8 in the morning, 1 cup at 2 p.m., and 1 cup at 9 p.m. My mixture was 1/4 cup of the dry clay to 2 cups of water and shake it really well. I was still a bit hyperthyroid, and my anemia was 50% better, and still I was on no medication. Doctors still think I am a miracle and have no idea I am on the clay, so they let me go home, and I am told that the bowel will need surgery. I continued from April 2012 to August 2012 for 4 months to faithfully drink 1 cup of clay 3 times per day. Also, I put a 1/2-inch poultice on my belly at night with saran wrap and slept with it on. My belly had a rash that outlined the damaged intestine. In August, I felt a sharp pain in my guts, and I know it was my spleen. I had been angry for some time, and the pain came from the area where the rash had been. I spent 45 minutes in the bathroom with a bowel movement that was the size of a baseball. Sorry to be graphic, but it was etched in my memory. It is now August, and I head to the hospital, and they do my 6th colonoscopy and more scans. Doctors tell me that my intestine was opened and my spleen has fallen into the intestines, the large intestines. I am hospitalized waiting for emergency surgery. I am told I will lose my spleen and I may go septic. So I'm going to, that's a cliffhanger there. I'm just going to finish it off and then introduce my guest. So there's not much more to the story, but it's a cliffhanger for sure. You want to know how this ends for sure, then I'll bring her on.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new ease-off drop and lift?
What in the world is an ease-off drop and lift?
Our ease-off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the EaseOff installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com. That's EaseOff.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB...
I can hear you a little bit. There's a commercial going.
...is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Up her story that she had written up, so I'm hoping she's okay with me finishing it up, because we left on a cliffhanger where she was, I was told I would lose my spleen and I may go septic. Wow, so that was a cliffhanger. So I'm just going to finish, okay? Again, I was on no medication and only on the clay. 3 days later, they did the surgery and opened my abdominal cavity up 9 inches to remove 8 inches of intestines. I woke up surrounded by 5 doctors, all wanting to know what I'd done to change my intestinal health. One asked, how did you change your intestines from a 70-year-old to a 20-year-old in 4 short months? Normal, no more colitis, ulcers, diverticulitis, polyps, etc. It was a miracle. It is then that I told them about the clay. Mind you, she was not on any medication, ever. The surgeon says it definitely is Crohn's disease, and it has that look she has seen hundreds of times. We waited for the test results to come back, and it is negative for Crohn's. I spent 1 week in the hospital healing from abdominal surgery. They said that was record time as well. I put a poultice on the staples in my stomach and slept at night with the saran wrap over it. The doctor took my staples out in 9 days and said it looked 4 weeks post-operation and there was rust on the staples. To this day, I continue to drink the clay, but only 5 ounces 3 times a day. Truly a lifesaver and a blessing. It is amazing when used properly. I find people do not stay on it long enough, nor do they take large enough doses. One of the biggest mistakes is they stir it instead of shaking it. At the first sign of a bit of discomfort, they stop using it. I get asked a lot if the clay just sits in your colon. Well, I tell you, after 6 colonoscopies in 4 months, if the doctors saw clay, I would have known about it. Instead, they saw unexplainable healing. So, anyway, these stories make me cry. I get really emotional, you guys. Oh, my gosh. That's just the most beautiful story. And so my guest, I'm very excited to introduce our listeners to the woman's story I just read. Her name is Marge Lonsdale, and she lives in Kamloops, British Columbia in Canada. And while she had a huge ordeal with this tapeworm and several other maladies, which landed her in the hospital, it was because of a friend who brought her some of Perrier's calcium bentonite clay that she's talking with us today. So she recovered completely, and she's been sharing the clay ever since. And I want you to know her. She's a very busy woman. So, and this is a Saturday in the middle of the summer. And so I'm really extremely grateful for her to be on the show because they own a dog daycare, her and her husband. She's also does life insurance agent, mutual fund representative. And she's always talking clay. And they have a rental property. And I mean, I don't even know how she keeps up with it all. So we're actually very blessed that she took the time out. So welcome to the show, Marge.
Thank you, Ingrid. It's nice to be here, and thank you for my story.
Oh, yeah, no, it's an amazing story. So that was in 2012. So I'm sure a lot of people in your circle heard about your story. And it started traveling from there, and you've been using the clay since. So, you know, I know you knew that Perrier, you know, closed out her business and then ended up restarting it. What kind of clay were you using in the meantime?
We were fortunate enough in Canada to have a little bit of a stockpile here. When I purchase the clay, I usually buy the 40-pound pail.
Mm-hmm.
So we were fortunate enough to have some in Ontario, and we were able to still get it, fortunately. Otherwise,
good.
I don't know what I would have done without it.
Right. You know, I've since heard of a couple other high-quality clays, but at the same time, I've experienced some really crappy clays. So, you know, it's kind of like buyer beware, you know?
Yeah. The one thing when you look for types of clay, you want to look at the color. You want to make sure it's a light gray almost with green to it.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be a swelling clay. Look for the pH. Perry's clay is 9.7 pH.
Mm-hmm.
Most other clays are only 2 pH.
Right.
So,
and how would you test that? With drugstore pH strips?
Yes. And you can also buy them. Yeah, I guess any drugstore. We also get them in pharmacies here in Canada.
Right. I mean, you can certainly buy pH strips online, but that's really good to know. So when you're making your liquid clay, you can dip a pH strip in it, and it should be a 9, you know, over 9.
Yeah, anything actually over 6, Ingrid, is really good.
Okay.
And the more interesting thing to do with your pH strips is test yourself first.
Mm-hmm.
Either through saliva or a urine test. Test your
mm-hmm.
pH. And then test the clay's pH that you're going to use and use it for approximately a week, and then you can test your saliva or your urine again and see if there's been any change.
Yeah, that's definitely very helpful because we always tell people if you're doing any kind of natural healing, you need to have your pH at 6.5 or higher, you know, and anything, you know, in the fives shows that you're, you know, not doing real well and you're going to be prone to cancer if you don't have it already.
Yes, and anything, as you're aware, disease grows, anything less than 5%.
Right.
Disease cannot live in anything over 6%.
Yeah.
pH.
Right. Yeah, well, I always have people do the 6 pH.
Excellent.
I know you said percent, but it's pH. So,
percent. I'm
talking
pH.
I know we do this kind of thing all the time. I do, too. Anyway, so you have all kinds of stories. So what was your first, you know, obviously people are coming to you. Well, what did you do? Can I have some of your clay? What are some of the first stories of people that came to you and your experience? And, you know, obviously you've dealt with people that say, well, I'll do this. But some people actually are, you know, want to be sick. I've run into that too. So you certainly have probably both, right? People that hold on to their illness and what the doctors say. Yeah,
there's some people you can talk to for a very long time and explain your story, and they still won't partake, or they'll try it once and go, it didn't work for me, right?
Right.
Probably the first person I had was my husband, who thought, well, let's give this a try. And about the third day, for most people, if you're consuming enough of it, you'll feel flu-like symptoms. And normally the fourth day, you kind of come out of it and you feel better. So in the third day, my husband went down with severe back pain across his kidneys and was very upset that I had forced him to do this. And the next day when he got up in the morning, he felt better, but he was peeing with little bits of grit and sand.
Oh, wow.
So he caught some of the grit and sand in a coffee filter, and he showed it to one of the nurses that came here. And she said, if I didn't know better, that's kidney stones, Mark, but how did you get them so fine? So that's kind of one of the very first people that drank the clay along with me. And another friend, a plumber friend, had chronic kidney stones. He usually went down once, if not twice a year, and was hospitalized. And he came and got the clay, and he also passed sand and had similar symptoms, like a very sore back on the third or fourth day. His experience was he passed kidney stones for up to a week in the form of just little bits of sand. And I think he's been almost 10 years now without a kidney stone attack ever again. Prior to that, he'd had 12 years of kidney stone attacks.
Right. Well, this is just interesting. Just so you know, I've been very anti-antibiotics. I consider antibiotics anti-life, you know, and they really wipe out your microbiome. And it takes a while to recover from that. But Mercola, you know, after, you know, of course, his bank accounts, you've heard of Dr. Joseph Mercola. Apparently, him and his family and everyone had their bank accounts, you know, just frozen. They couldn't withdraw any money or do anything. That just happened this week. It was pretty shocking. I mean, he's been under attack quite a bit. But there was an article that came out, Oral Antibiotics and Kidney Stones, and that when you're on antibiotics for any length of time, they seem to coincide with the development of kidney stones. I've always associated kidney stone formation with, drinking soda pop, you know, which is very acidic. Yeah. Any kind of soda pop, you know, they say it takes, you know, 30 glasses of water to neutralize one can of soda pop. So I always tell people, you know, hopefully you're not a soda pop drinker. You know, all the sugar and the carbonation combination seem to be a real problem. But that was the first I've heard of the connection of antibiotics with the formation of kidney stones. It was never on my radar because I never had any kidney issues because those weren't any things I did. You know, I never done antibiotics. Right. I don't do soda pop. So, but I, you know, I've run into this quite a bit with people. I don't know what you think about that. You know,
I've heard and read a couple studies that have coordinated the two, and more so to aspartame.
Yes.
That's in the pop. So I don't know about there, but I know in Canada now it's on the radar of the health organizations that this is a problem and they need to deal with aspartame. So they're just starting to release some of their studies now.
Wow. Here, Dr. Betty Martini, you know, she passed this year. Very sad. She lost her husband. But anyhow, she had Mission Possible. That's what she called her organization. And her whole goal, her whole life was to outlaw aspartame. And she has all the studies. And she became an honorary doctor because she, you know, memorized everything all the studies, all the science on aspartame. She knew it backwards and forwards. She was a little walking encyclopedia. But yeah, she
that's
had
fabulous.
Yeah, groups started all over the place, but you know, it was, you know, it exacerbates diabetes, you know, all these things, and they're putting it in medications. You know, I mean, children's medications. I mean, it's just horrifying because it converts to formaldehyde in your body.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I knew that.
Horrifying.
Isn't that just insane what they'll take and use until how many years? Aspartame's probably, I was familiar with it in the 80s. I can't even imagine how long it's been used in different products.
Well, the thing is that, you know, people try to avoid it, but if you're doing any kind of processed food that's sweet at all, it can hide under the label natural flavors. They have, or it doesn't even have to be on the label because they got it so concentrated. It's called Neotame. Neotame is like such a concentration of this molecule of aspartame that it's like 1,000 times sweeter than, you know, just like your aspartame that you'd buy in the store for a sweetener.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so it's a hidden ingredient because when they're, you know, they're required to put ingredients on products, but if it's such a minute amount, it doesn't have to be listed on the label.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah,
I'll
send you a publication. We printed a publication called The Artificially Sweetened Times, and after my husband was killed, we sold out of it, and I didn't print it again. I was like, you know, I just can't keep up with this anymore. Right. Well, it was a gift of love anyway. You know, I had all the same expenses, and then I didn't have the, you know, the shared work.
The means.
You know.
Yeah. No, I understand that.
But
yes,
we have the PDF on our website. I still have the website and the PDF, so I can certainly post that in the chat because it's, and I'll send it to you an email, Marge, because it's really a great document. And it's really easy to read, and it has all kinds of things like that. You know, even I love the back page because you know how intuitive your dogs are and animals are. I mean, isn't it like your dogs know to drink the clay, right?
Yeah.
They love it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they do. We've done lots of things with animals, too, for the clay. It's been amazing.
Right. Well, they know not to do anything with aspartame. So squirrels, you know, they're getting ready for the winter, and we were at an outside patio in a restaurant, and this is on the back page of the Artificially Sweetened Times, and they have all these different kinds of sugar, right? And the squirrel is sitting there going through them and literally discarding all of them except for the raw cane sugar.
Oh, interesting. That's so true, right?
Yep.
Yeah, it's like certain types of dog foods. They hide certain types of chemical inside of them, like melamine and I can never say the word properly, but plastics and stuff like that. And a lot of dogs don't like certain dog foods, right? Just because of the stuff, and it's nowhere near as regulated as our food industry is, and still things get by in our food industry, right?
Oh, exactly. Well, the other thing, I mean, I hate to tell you this, but I always tell people if you know if you're treating an animal, if you have an animal, you make your own dog food. You have to know someone that makes it. You do not give them the stuff from the store because, you know, they have these rendering houses. You've heard of, you know, where, you know, dogs and cats from all the vaccines they give to the animals that leads them to get cancer and everything else. So anyhow, they end up, you know, euthanizing them and they don't waste anything. So that goes to a rendering
house.
No,
they don't.
And the rendering house ends up selling a lot of the, you know, it's protein. So they sell it right back to the dog food industry. So the dogs are, you know, becoming cat. They don't want to eat, you know, their dog companions. You know, they're dead. You know, nobody wants to be a cannibal with their own species,
No.
you know?
No, Exactly, and you're unfortunately very correct.
Yeah, I know. It's horrible.
Yeah.
Ah, I know. It's all diabolical. It's all, I remember watching, what was the one with Charlton Heston, Soylent Green way back in the day.
Yeah, right.
And, and it's like, oh my gosh, it's true.
Yeah, it's true.
So,
I'm going to change the subject from that one, Angry.
I know. Let's go ahead and talk about clay. So,
yeah, we're not going to talk about that anymore.
I'm sorry.
Are you familiar?
Yeah.
Are you familiar with MRSA or C. diff?
Yes, absolutely.
Perfect. That was probably the second person who came to me that had heard of me.
Mm-hmm.
And she was 19 years old. She had had C. diff for approximately 2 years. She was a skeleton, and she was a pale gray.
Uh-huh.
And she smelled like death. And she said to me at the front door, she said, I cannot stop bleeding. I've tested positive for MRSA, and I also have C. diff, and I'm going into the hospital for the last time. The doctors agreed to give me one more treatment. And then after that, if that doesn't cure that, then I'm supposed to go home and get my affairs in order.
Oh.
And I looked at her, and I handed her 8 pounds of clay, and I gave her a list of directions of what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So she got out of the hospital after approximately a week, and they said that they do fecal transplants as well to try and clear and restart your colon. They wouldn't do that for her, and the doctor said he won't treat her anymore. Unfortunately, she should just get her affairs in order. She couldn't stomach the taste of clay. She just couldn't do it, but she plugged her nose every day, and she drank just like I drank. And she got 3/4 through the 8 pounds of clay, and she phoned me, and she said, Marg, I'm starting back to work. I can function again, and I'm going to stop. And I said, you really shouldn't. And she did. She completely stopped everything, and she's probably okay for about 3 months and then slid back. She came back.
Wait. How long did she do the clay, the liquid clay?
Six months.
Okay, 6 months. Right, okay.
Yeah. But her system was so dirty, she needed more time.
Yes.
She didn't consume as much as I did. She consumed less. Like, you'll still get to the end destination. You just won't. It'll take you longer.
Right.
So she came back, did another full 8 pounds of clay, and made it into the liquid form, right, mixing it, one part clay to 8 parts water. And she finished that last 8 pounds, and she's never looked back, and that's now since 2013, so 10 years, and she works full-time, and she's fully functioning. MRSA, gone.
Yep.
C. diff, gone.
No, that's fantastic. Yeah, there's another, just so you know, in prison, they don't have access to anything. And MRSA is totally treated by the prisoners with urine therapy. And it's 100% every time.
Nice.
So if you don't have any clay with you, do your urine. I mean, there's a whole website on that. We've had shows just about urine therapy. So I just want people to know, don't, think that all is lost. You always have your urine, and it's like homeopathy, and it's like medicinal, and you can use it that way. And there's a whole website on that by Dr. Edward Group. But yeah, the clay is, I would always have clay. You know what I've told people, Marge? I've told people that you could heal anything with your own urine, clay, and I'm actually wanting to do a show just on castor oil, too. Castor oil is something to have on hand, too. But those three things, I think you can heal just anything, whatever it is. So
wonderful.
What's your? So you have another story. That's a great story, by the way.
Yes. Yeah.
So what's the next story? You have a lot of them.
Yeah, I got a lot of them. A gentleman came to me, and he was this nice orange color, and he could no longer urinate for whatever reason. The doctors had given him 4 months and said that, you're not going to make it, so you need to go home and get your stuff in affair. And they were probably 4 hours away from me, and they'd heard my story. So they contacted me. He had to quit working. He was a 61-year-old man at that time, and he wanted to work to age 65 to complete his retirement. So he was off for the year. He had been to the doctor. They wanted to send him for chemotherapy and radiation. They didn't know what he had, but they wanted to chemo and radiation for him.
Right.
So I said, well, you can't do the both. You can't drink the clay and then take those options because the treatment's not going to work and the clay is going to interfere with it. Plus the radiation and the chemo is going to interfere with the clay. So you're going to be doing a bunch of stuff that's not going to work. So you're going to have to make a choice. So he probably talked to me over a week for 5 to 6 hours, not all at once, but an hour here, hour there. And he asked me to send him some clay, so I sent him an 8-pound container of the clay, taught him how to mix it, and he stayed away from his doctor. So the orange color clearly was the liver issue, right, which we all know the clay can heal relatively quickly if you drink enough of it. So he cleaned that up, and then his urination probably started within 2 days of consuming the clay, like he was still a bright orange color because of his liver, but he could start to urinate in 2 days. And within 6 months, he was back to work. His doctor called him in the 7th or 8th month and said, you should come and see me. What have you done? How have you cleaned your skin up? You know, she was quite surprised at how well he looked and how well his blood work was. So he told her what he had done. She was not receptive and threatened not to treat him again. He said, that's fine, because what you had to offer wasn't going to help me, so see you later. And he's still working to this day. Yeah.
He's fine, and he'll stick with the clay and forget the doctors. I mean, you have to understand, you're paying your doctors to keep you chronically ill. That's how they make their money, not on your health. Yep. So anyway,
exactly.
Stay tuned. You're listening to my fabulous guest, Marge Lonsdale in British Columbia.
Some interesting news. Due to all the recent claims about possible nuclear wars, viruses, solar flares, and civil unrest, people are scrambling to prepare and stockpile food. But the one thing out of reach for many is an underground bunker. Until now. Because you can now have a 3D printed underground bunker in just one day. An excavator digs a hole in your backyard, and 3dbunkers.com shows up in a small truck and sets up their 3D printer under a tent completely undetected. They can print as many rooms as you want at a fraction of the cost compared to traditional metal bunkers. 3D Bunkers uses polymer concrete, which is 5 times stronger than regular cement. YouTube 3dbunkers.com and watch the video. The creators of 3D Bunkers is looking for a business partner that can help bring this technology to the world. And we need to protect our way of life without living in fear. Contact Brad at 3dbunkers.com for more details or visit 3dbunkers.com.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today because you can handle the truth.